Oh yeah, candy bar. I still haven't gotten my new package of candy bar from Dario.
Really? I haven't
Yeah.
even opened mine. Like maybe it's not candy. Where's my package? Where'd you go? It's over here. Let me pop it open just to make sure it's not candy, because it might not be candy. I've yet to open it.
'Cause usually I get one right around the same. I usually get mine like a day before yours.
Know.
I'm in the same state.
It might not even be
I hope
candy.
nobody took my candy. Yeah, he could have other stuff for you.
Oh, it is not candy.
See, you've had presents sitting there all along.
Something. Oh. Open faster. He wrapped it in fucking tape.
What is, oh.
My God. Really? Oh my God. It's not candy.
What is it?
It's not candy. Oh my gosh. Oh, open. Open. It is an Agent Callus action figure.
Oh, man.
Oh man! Why did I not open
Well, now you can talk about it on the show.
a week ago? Oh, you're right. Oh my God! Come out of here, Alexander Callus. Get out of the fucking box so I can look at you and oogle you and have you in my life. Oh, I just ripped the box. Oh, well, but then I guess that's that. I just ripped the box. I'm just gonna rip the whole fucking thing now. He's wearing his dumb strainer hat. Does he talk? He has a blaster. Now you know you have to keep this part edited into the episode.
And now it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Eight. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to Jay Guys and Jedi.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of Jay Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars: The Clone Wars. In this episode, in a nearly vacant town, R2-D2 and his team find a cloned commando suffering from amnesia. There will be confetti and parties, because happy 100th episode, Clone Wars! You did it! You made it to 100! This is the 100th episode of Clone Wars. We're talking about missing in action this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good. Not as good as you, though.
I know. So, I got a package from Dario about a week ago, right? And I thought it was just more candy. So I didn't open it. I didn't think about it.
Well,
And I was actually.
it was stressing me out because when Hope gets candy, that means I gotta get candy to match Hope. So I'm like, ooh, maybe someone snatched my candy from my, because Dario wouldn't be so evil as to just send Hope candy and not me matching candy. No,
He
would you,
did that to
Dario? You
you.
wouldn't be that evil. So
He did that in the beginning before he started sending me candy. He would only send you candy.
that's true because he didn't know you needed candy, but now he knows.
Yeah. But anyway, I got this package a week ago, so I was like, okay, it's probably more candy, but we still have candy, so I'll just put this on my desk and open it later. And so we started recording tonight, and I was like, and Chris was like, I still haven't got my candy. And I was like, what? And then I like went over and I picked up the package. I was like, maybe it's not
And I was
candy.
thinking, I also, and this is my chance to thank Dario. I got, although I thanked him in person, but it's now to thank him in front of the world, the entire world who's listening right now. He sent me a package full of comic books that he'd meant to give me when I was up there visiting last time, but I didn't have room for them in my backpack when I was leaving on the bus. So he mailed those up. So I thought, yeah, maybe Hope's package isn't. exactly candy?
So I start opening this package, and then I see, like, inside it says Star Wars Rebels, and I was just like, what? That's not candy.
What?
It's an Agent Kallus action figure. And then I hated myself for not opening it for a week, because I'm sure Dario was, like, looking at his tracking number going, did she not get that?
Well, it doesn't matter, and it's going to be 3 more weeks before he hears this, too, so...
Oh, no, I'm going to message him right after the show and thank him for it. But, yeah, thank you so much, Dario. This is so cool. I have Alexander Kallus. He's going to podcast with me. If you join the Rebellion now, together we can turn the tide. Now I just need a Zeb so I can make them kiss. I need a big old, like, 10-inch Zeb toy so I can make them, like, kiss and stuff. And then they can go to Lirison, and they can go, like, play with tiny Lissat children and be really old papas. Just like Steve Bloom said on Twitter and to me at Dragon Con last year when he was like, yeah, Zeb and Kallus are totally going to be together. And I was like, yeah, wishful thinking, Steve Bloom. And then they did! Yay!
Well, all I know for this episode, I'm sitting here with my buddy. Oh. Hi, buddy.
Hi, Grievous. Ha. Kallus doesn't make any sounds, but he does have his bow rifle, which is really cool, actually. It's a really cool bow rifle.
Has he got a big bow rifle?
Yeah, it's his bow rifle. But I'm super duper duper excited. Thank you so much, Dario. I'm sorry I waited a week to open it because I just thought it was candy. And I was like, I'll get to that later. It'll be fine.
He's suffocated in there in the meantime.
I know. That's probably why he looks so pissed off. He hasn't found his... He's been suffocating in a package for a week and he hasn't found his boyfriend Zeb yet.
Are you gonna have him and Rex, like, have fights over you and stuff when you're, like, all... Are your parents, like... Gonna come open the door like dinner's ready, and you've got like Rex in one hand and Kallus the other hand, and Rex is just like, she's mine. You're beating your heads together.
But I will say this, Kallus has legs for days.
We'll share.
Yeah, like Kallus has legs for days, but he's actually taller than my Rex figure, so maybe my Rex is a 10 inch. And wait, I have the packaging right here. How tall are you, Kallus? From the animated series, ages 4 and up. Agent Kallus is a member of the Imperial Security Bureau and commands a unit of both Army and Navy people. How tall are you? Includes Blaster! It doesn't say how tall he is. But I think he's a 12-inch, because Rex has to be 10-inch because he's shorter. He is an ISB agent of awesome. I'm so excited. I've been doing a little light Rebels rewatching, just like little things here and there, and I like was watching something from like season 1, and I was like, my God, Ezra was such a tiny little blueberry at the time, my God, and I just got me really excited for like when we actually get to do Rebels.
I just did a rewatch of The Last Jedi now that it's out on digital.
I need to still watch it again. I still haven't seen it yet.
You know, I have a spoiler for anybody who hasn't watched it. I'm assuming everybody's seen it by now. If you haven't, it's about 30 seconds of spoiler here, and I'll make it vague anyway. I think Holdo knew what she was going to do right from the beginning. Because I was watching the scene where Poe's throwing a fit, and he's throwing the chairs around and yelling at her and stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, she could take him aside in this and solve the whole thing in a minute and say, look, we have a plan, blah, 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 shut up. Because when he found out the plan, he goes, oh, that could work, you know, later on when it was already being enacted. But I think she didn't want anybody to know that didn't know, because I think she thought people would try to talk her out of it. And I think she was planning on doing that. And she did it a little sooner than she was going to, because they had found out the code and were shooting the rebel ships. But I think she knew.
You know, I could see that. Saying it has I've only seen it once. I need to see it again. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and watch it again.
Now, the next time you see it, think about that and see if I'm crazy or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because I might be crazy.
Oh, you are, but that's why we love you. Did you have a good week?
I had a pretty good week, yeah.
I had a tiring week. We have a manager about to leave, so I've been training a new person all week. So, I honestly have been just working and writing fan fiction. That's all I've done. Mm-hmm. I've written 50 pages/31,000 words in a week and a half.
Well, that's what happens when you're properly inspired, I guess.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I wrote 50 pages. In a week and a half. Like, holy God. So I've been on a nice writing sabbatical, and I've been enjoying it. I put up chapter 5 of my Thrawn fanfiction the other day. Chapter 5, guys. Chapter 5. I'm trash. It's okay, everybody.
You'll
just
be all
trash.
Right.
Don't worry. I'll be okay.
All I know is I was thinking the world needs some more Thrawn fanfiction, and somebody needs to get in there and fill that void.
Oh, he can... Wait, what? What voids are being filled? He can fill what voids now?
The void of... Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry, I was being serious and not classy. I don't know what's wrong with me.
I was being classy. What's wrong with you?
No. Classy and trashy.
I just heard, like, Thrawn and filling voids, and I got very excited about myself. And then I realized what you were saying, and I was like, I could play along, or I can make this slutty.
Or I could just let Yoda jump into my body and take over.
Yes! Fill all the voids! They called me the Void Filler. All right, I'm about to read a lot. You ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I am ready. Did you like this episode better?
I did like this episode a lot better, actually.
A lot better. Okay, yeah. This is the best of this arc, so.
I should hope that it would be a little better for the 100th episode. I should hope there should be a little extra to it.
But, you know, I also like the feeling that, like, it just felt like a normal Clone Wars episode. Because, like, I think back to the 100th episode of, like, Once Upon a Time, and they brought back, like, 12 people who hadn't been in the show for, like, 2 seasons, and it was, like, all these bells and whistles and stuff. And this was just an episode. A good, well-made episode, and I like that about it. It didn't have, like, any bells and whistles. But there, I still feel like, you know, and I'll say it in my notes, like, there were things about it that I really liked because it was the 100th episode, so I'm about to read a lot. Let me take a drink of my coffee.
I'm drinking Mountain Dew Kickstart.
Mm.
So we're going to be up and running for this one.
Yeah, and I had a nap today. It was great. All right, you ready?
Yep.
Missing in Action is the 100th! Episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. I'm so happy that for 100 episodes, I have numbered that number right. Because you remember how I said, like, I was so scared I was going to, like, miss a number somewhere? And then, like about episode, like, 95, I'd be like, oh, no, I misnumbered. Nope, it's right. I got it right. I'm so excited. So the 100th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on January 5th, 2013. So happy 2013, Clone Wars. It was written by Brent Friedman and directed by Stuart Lee. There's a lot of extra information for you, so here we go. During the episode, a hologram showing Gregor's military records was displayed in Erebesh after R2-D2 scanned his identifying code. As well as displaying Gregor's status as MIA during the Battle of Sarish, it played a Sig-1 class 212 attack battalion in Foxtrot Group, as well as Gregor's height and weight. The designation of Sergeant First Class contradicts Colonel Gascon, stating that Gregor was a captain, despite the fact that Gascon was going off the hologram. The Battle of Sarish that Gregor became MIA took place on the Battle of the Planet of Sarish during the Clone Wars. It ended up becoming one of the Galactic Republic's most devastating defeats, with many clone troopers perishing in battle. The marking on Gregor's helmets were inspired by the hash marks of that of Boston Bruins goaltender Jerry Cheevers, stenciled on his mask to denote the stitches he would have gotten had he not been wearing his protective gear. This is my favorite. Here we go. The city in this episode that this episode takes place is called Pons Ora. I just had to point out some of the shops that are located around Pons Ora has signs in Erebish. And some of these sign shops are called Lando Capes, Game Go, Dr. Evazon Cosmetic Surgery, I love this one, Admiral Snack Bar.
Oh, I like that.
And it's running a promotion called It's a Frap.
Yeah, of course, they had to.
And my favorite sign was Adopt a Wampa. So those were all like the little signs, but Admiral Snack Bar, It's a Frap. I just like died laughing.
You know, in the Walt Disney World, Star Wars world, they're gonna have an Admiral Snack Bar somewhere.
I know, and they better have a promotion called It's a Frap.
They better. Well, they better just have that right on the menu.
I know, it's a Frappuccino.
They better they better just serve fraps and wraps there.
There's also a poster on Pond's Aura that shows
and ginger snaps, fraps, wraps, and ginger snaps.
There's also a poster in Pond's Aura that shows a Snivian frozen in carbonite with a text saying, "Interior decorator wanted. Call Jabba for appointment." So you get a wall decoration. The surly Aqualish seen spitting into the bucket on the streets of Abafar is designed to resemble a simplified look of the original Kenner action figure of Walrus Man. And this week, they actually had a video of, like, an extra video with extra information like they used to do back in season 2 and 3. Because remember, I used to transcribe that, and I hated my life every time I had to do it.
Right, now maybe they'll do it from here on in, but I'll bet you they're just doing it for 100, so.
I think so, too.
Nice little flashback for you.
And it was starring Dee Bradley Baker and Dave Filoni.
You need one of those little atomizers like they had in the old days, like the opera singers would spray in their mouth before they do their aria.
Yeah.
Just give yourself a little kss, kss.
Here we go. Dee Bradley Baker, the voice of the clones, was also on this video, and he says, "Gregor is a unique clone in a lot of ways from the other clones that I've done before. He doesn't know who he is. So the way that he behaves towards other people in the rest of the world is not that of a trained, confident soldier. This is a fella that has been kind of beaten down and broken and is really enslaved." And then Dave Filoni jumps in saying, "Dee Baker and I have been working on the character of the clones for many, many years now. It has been a long developing process to create these characters who are very similar, but when you get down to it, very different." Dee comes back to say, "It's really interesting to see the clones that are slightly deviated from what you would call the archetypal clone, which for me, I take to be Rex." And Dave Filoni says, "We have done Cut LaQuane, who was someone who actively rejected their role in war. We have done the traitor clone Slick. We've done the ultimate soldier, which is Rex and what Rex represents. And here we have Gregor, who is someone who has forgotten who he is. There was no other clone around, so how would he know that he was a clone?" And Dee continues saying, "I don't think we've ever had a clone quite like that, not knowing what they can do other than serve in a really horrible job in a really horrible diner, this horrible master that he's got. There's a softness and a quietness to the way Gregor starts to talk, to the way that Gregor's character starts." And something interesting is, as he was talking through this part, he was talking quietly in Gregor's voice, and then as he, like, talked through this next paragraph, he, like, changed to talking like Gregor at the end. It was a really cool moment in the video. You'll notice that he's not speaking as a soldier. He's tentative and hesitant in the way that he speaks. Not too loud, he doesn't want to upset things. But as he realizes who he is and he gets locked into what it's about, then he can speak confidently in a voice that is truly his." And then Dave Filoni says, When it comes to Gregor, something that I really wanted to stress was that he was unique even for a clone. I didn't want this idea that he was just some grunt trooper that was found in the middle of nowhere that had somehow miraculously survived. When we were in the design phase, I thought it would be great if this guy was a Republic commando. I thought it was something that the fans have wanted. It's something that I've been interested in trying to find a way to put in more Republic commandos. They're not something that comes from George Lucas's Star Wars. They're a creation of a video game franchise." And then he kind of like side added, "a really great video game that I've played to completion. But that's not saying that, but they're not something that you see in a Star Wars film. What the D squad got in this episode in Gregor was the elite. He is a one-man wrecking team. His dedication level to this mission was immense, to where he makes the ultimate sacrifice that soldiers are willing to make. That is the unsung thing about a soldier. That's what these guys are doing in reality all the time." And then Dave Filoni dropped into his troll voice and said, "You know, I start to feel kind of bad. You like this guy, Gregor, and dang it, we just blew him up. I need some wiggle room there so I added the line, 'I'll make my way home, I promise.' So we had this explosion and making a promise, and I very much believe in making promises, that I'd put my money on Gregor surviving that. And to be perfectly honest, with Darth Maul being back, I have to keep as many characters alive that I can, because boy, you better be ready. And then the video shifted at this point to them talking about the 100th episode and how this was the 100th episode of Clone Wars. And Dave Filoni says, "This is the 100th episode of Clone Wars. It's kind of strange. I remember in the early discussions with George and the early press releases when interviewers would ask George about how many episodes will you make, he would go, well, we're making 100. And I thought, wow, that would be really something if we made 100 episodes of Star Wars. Man, I wonder what that would be like. And I'll tell you what it's like. We blinked and we passed it. I wondered if there were 100 stories in Clone Wars that would be unique enough to do this. And yes, there are. If you look back at the first episode, Ambush, and you looked at the 100th episode, the increase in quality across the board, whether it be the character design, the animation, the lighting, everything has gotten better and better and better and better. I've been really fortunate to have an incredible team. The one thing that we all have in common, one thing that I think is true across all 100 episodes and beyond, is that we all love Star Wars. Just like you, we grew up with it. We want to make sure that you get what you get each week is a true Star Wars experience. We love it so much, to 100 and beyond, and we'll just keep on rolling." I actually have two notes about all that. So something I found kind of funny is that we always say, like when I say we, I mean like you and me, we always talk about how like Cody is kind of like the main, like, archetypal clone. Like, he doesn't deviate, he hasn't had all these big missions, he follows all his orders, he followed Order 66. But then they're talking about Rex, and like, yes, Rex is the main clone of the series. Though I found the funny thing about it is that Rex might be the archetypal clone for the series, but it's interesting because he's the most unique clone, I think, that we have, because he's had the most experience and like that. I think Rex is so unique. And so I found it kind of like they didn't say that Cody was the archetypal clone, that it was Rex, this like already super unique guy who's been on bajillion journeys.
I think they're both working on that TV show, and they can't. I mean, Cody is a sketch to that. Cody's like the most developed clone in the movies, which is really not at all. It's has developed to the point of where you know his name, and you know he and Obi-Wan are kind of buddies. You get that. You sort of get the impression of that, really, more than anything. But you know, as far as D. Bradley Baker goes, he's voiced him, and yeah, that is the clone that they know inside and out. And you know, it would I think it would be natural of them to work outward from there, you know, and use him as their center, you know.
Yeah.
Even if he's not the perfect clone, you know, in you know, just an archetypal way, he's still a really good model for a clone anyway.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, we've seen it like time and time again because it's Rex. I mean, he is the main character.
But he's not super rule oriented, but at the same time, he is very into the rules and the ideas, but you know, he's not really extreme in any way except for really his skill, you know. He's sort of a synthesis of all the positive aspects of a clone, you know. He's got a sort of balance of all the things that would make you a good warrior and clone and a person too. He's got a lot of the characteristics of a, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the reason gets along so well with like Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka is because he's a sort of affable personality too, you know.
Yeah, so. He's kind of like, you know how in science how you have like a base chemical that you work around when you're doing an experiment?
Yeah.
He's that base chemical, and
yeah,
like Obi-Wan, like Ahsoka, and Anakin are like
sample.
The ingredients. The what?
He's their control sample.
Yeah, that, yes. Yes, very much so. That's actually a really good way of putting it. And then the other thing my only other note I wanted to point out was Dave's line about believing and making a promises came true, because then we got Gregor back in Rebels.
That's right. I got some things to say about Gregor by the end of this one.
I have a lot of things to say.
I bet you do.
I have a shit ton of things to say about Gregor. Mm-hmm. So, do you have a shit ton of things to say about Gregor?
Mm-hmm. Yoda has lots of things to say. But we'll say this about Gregor. A soldier's most powerful weapon is courage. In bed.
Oh, that was sneaky. It took me a second to realize you were doing that.
Yoda snuck it right in.
Yeah, like a
snuck
little...
Snuck it right like a, in, Yoda did.
like a quiet little fart. Silent but deadly, and you just, like, waddle off the elevator and leave everybody else behind, and they're all just like, swamp gas!
Crop dusted you have been.
Crop dusted?
I had a waiter who used to crop dust the non-smoking section when he got mad at them. A certain table.
Really?
He would go by and crop dust them horribly.
I've never heard that phrase. That's amazing.
Yep, you're gone. You're gone, and like as you're gone, the dust settles down. You know, there's that delayed. You use the air currents that you create to.
Oh my god, I'm going to use that phrase from here on out. See, you teach me things. Crop dusting, little shavers, mm-hmm. Like I'm learning things.
You work in a public retail context. That's where crop dusting is most effectively used. Crop dusting is really great. Oh. This wasn't a waiter, this was a bartender at a bar I worked with. And if he was feeling especially, let's say, crop dustery on a certain night, and you had, you know, an audience, crammed full of people,
mm-hmm.
he would tell us ahead of time that he was going on a crop dusting run, and we would run up to where the soundboard was, which is sort of raised up a few feet so you could see the whole crowd, and then just watch him make his way through the crowd, and then you could see just a few seconds later everybody just be like, oh, whoa. Little spaces clearing out. It was beautiful.
That's amazing. Oh, my God. Oh,
use
I learned
it, people. Use it or lose it.
See, I just prefer the elevator method and just go.
If you know, you could do it subtly or you could put both arms out like you're a plane and go when you go by. Depends on what company you're in.
Instead of like a gun, you're just like.
Yeah.
Instead of like tuka 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 tuka, it's just. See, we call it a mouse on a.
It's like a horrifying version of North by Northwest.
See, we call it like a mouse on a motorcycle, just. Just a little mouse on a motorcycle going across the floor, or we blame it on my pug.
Well, we used to live out in the woods, and we usually had multiple dogs, and we lived out in the woods, so it'd get blamed on deer and dogs.
Yep, we blame it on the pug. Though that little pug can clear a room by herself, so.
I'm sure, yeah, pugs are notorious.
Yeah,
Pugs are stinky little creatures. God bless them. Stinky little snorty, wheezy creatures.
I was taking Lucy out last night, and the wind was blowing, and I, like, picked her up to, like, put, like, because she's old now, so she has trouble going upstairs. I picked her up, and she snorted, and the wind caught it just right, and it just got sprayed all in my face, and I was just like, ugh, dog.
The joys of pet ownership.
Ugh, yeah, give me my cats all day, every day.
And cats are more likely to projectile vomit on you, though.
No, have I told you about my kitty Spokes and, like, the silent, like, the sneaky vomit that she does?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, how she
our,
can
our
just,
cat
like...
used to do that. He used to wolf down food and then just, like, throw it up in a multicolored, like, string of loop, like, right out of his mouth.
No, like, she doesn't even do that. She'll just be sitting there perfectly normal and just sleeping, and then she'll wake up, put her head over the side of the couch and just go,
whoop, bleh,
and then just, like, go back to sleep, and I'll be like, ah, oh, cat! Why would you do that? Well, act one.
Wouldn't you do that if you could? Act one.
And then just like go right back to sleep? Yeah. I hate throwing up. Like, that's one of the worst things in the world. So, all right. my very short act one. The rest is long. So, act one. The last couple weeks, R2-D2 is rolling on a secret mission with a group of droids called the D-Squad. They consist of Cutie, Goldie, Greyjoy, and Whack. If it's not obvious, some of those are our nicknames for them. They're being led by a jerk of a frog butt named Colonel Meeber Gascon. After crash-landing on the most boring episode of Clone Wars last week, the D-Squad is stuck on a planet called Abafar, a.k.a. The Void. They come across a town called Pons Ora. On to this week! It's a nice callback to a previous Star Wars, because R2 mentions that Pons Ora looks a lot like Tatooine. The D-Squad rolls through the rough town getting judged by the local. But that's okay, because Gascon is judging the locals right back, calling Abafar the armpit of the galaxy, and he's so upset that he's here, and the droids continue to suck, and he just needs a bubble bath at this point. And Gascon has the munchies and looks for a place to eat. Finding a diner, Gascon tells the droids to scout out the city and see if there are any enemies about. He's gonna get himself a David Hasselhoff-sized cheeseburger. Like an idiot, Gascon announces to the diner that he works for the Grand Republic and demands to be served because he's the smallest dick in the room. And the owner, Mr. Borkus, doesn't like droids, so Whack has to leave. He also doesn't like people like Gascon and chases the two out of the diner with a knife. Whack gets an idea and leads Gascon to a trash pile behind the restaurant. You know, the trash where Gascon actually belongs. With no choice and starving.
Amen. Amen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. He is a trash character. You're welcome. With no choice and starving, Gascon eats the garbage. He finally has come full circle being the lowly trash man he is.
Yes.
Meanwhile, R2's team stumble upon some battle droids realizing that this is a separatist planet. What did you think of Act 1? I broke it right before Gregor got there, because that's really where the episode goes in a different direction.
Yeah.
If this is your first time listening, go back to the Blue Shadow Virus episodes for why we go, yeah.
first step in redemption, Gascon eats garbage.
I know.
I'm going to
it's wonderful.
I'm going to put up the argument that what the hell is the diner owner's name?
Mr. Borkus, but you can make a nickname.
I'm gonna say I like Borkus. Mr. Borkus is actually not a bad guy. He's a dick, but I think he's a man of principles. He kicks Gascon out of his diner, and yep. We'll get to more later. I love the look of the dirty diner. It's really, truly dirty looking, and I like that you see it from Gascon's point of view. So you see the floor and underneath the tables and stuff. And as someone who's worked in food service, if there's demons or skeletons in the closet, that's where you're going to see them, from a roach eye view. Or from the and plus plenty of space roaches just running around everywhere. I like that.
It was very Wally, the little roach on Wally.
Yeah. Actually, they were saying the last episode, the super boring episode, was supposed to look like the cartoonist Mobius. I think this one, when they got to the city with, like, the orange sky and stuff like that in the city, this one looked a little bit more like a Mobius comic than the one that was supposed to look like a Mobius comic, in my opinion.
I would totally agree.
But that's all I had for part one. Kind of short part.
Yeah, I mean, we got Gascon eating trash, so that's great.
And I like how, like, you. Actually, I'm getting ahead of us anyway.
Yeah. As I was watching, like, the narrator was recapping the previous two episodes, I realized how much of the two previous episodes could have been edited down to one episode. And I think it would have been better.
It would have probably been pretty good as just one episode. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. The first half being them getting the chip, and the second half is the void. And it would have been, like, 22 minutes less of Whack and Gascon, like, waxing life and stupidity.
Doing pratfalls and gags and stuff, yeah.
You would have only had one episode of that. And it would have, like, I would argue it probably would have felt a little bit disjointed, because you would have, like, one half episode of just, like, battle, and then the second half episode of them, like, walking through the void. But you could have, like, cut last week's episode entirely and have them crash right outside of Pond's aura.
Yep.
Like, within sight of the place, or, like, they crash and Gascon's like, oh my god, we crash! And then he sees the Void Strider bird thing run by.
He splits off with the droids, they catch the birds, and the droids meet him there.
Yeah.
Bingo bango. Zingo zango.
Bingo bongo.
Bingo yeah. Django Fett.
Django Boba Fett babes. Thrawn?
Oh, Chris. Thrawn on the mind.
Oh, you just don't even know. Wait till we get to to Rebels. But yeah, like, I realized, like, they could have crashed just outside the city, saw the birds run by, and that would have been so cool, because you would have had the battle in the first part, they go into hyperspace, while in hyperspace, they hit the comet field, which was really pretty, and then they crash right outside of town, and they look over, and they're like, oh god, there's a town. End of episode, pick up here. Like, it would have been so much better. Ugh. Anyway. One detail to go along with your diner detail, I really like how dusty everything is. Like, the droids all have dust on them, the locals have this kind of, like, pale white dusty thing on them, all the buildings are dirty, and the signs are, like, as I was going through the extra information notes, I was looking at the designs of the signs, and, like, some of the signs are, like, missing letters and stuff. Like, stuff like that is just such a nice detail.
Yeah.
I love when they, like, dirty up animation like that.
It looks beat up and lived in.
Yeah, I mean, because I was looking at Cutie, actually, in, like, R2, and, like, it's a little bit more obvious on them, because, like, Goldie and Greyjoy, because they have such dark color. Well, not Goldie, because he's kind of bright, but Greyjoy, he's so dark that he still looks kind of dark. But Cutie doesn't almost look pink anymore, and R2 is, like, very faded blue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Well, the prequel look was very, like, brand new. You know, Star Wars looked beat up and lived in. But I think George Lucas wanted the prequels to look like it was more from a Gilded Age. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't as much grit and beat-upness. There were a lot more new ships and stuff. So it's neat in Clone Wars when it gets back to that original Star Wars. This is more like, you know, the original trilogy, where everything's happening in the poorer parts of the galaxy. So everything's more used, lived in, and just, you know, held together by space duct tape.
You know, that's a really good point, because, like, if we go back and look at, like, earlier seasons of Clone Wars, when the war was, like, very early on, all the ships were relatively new. It was, like, new equipment, new ships, new fighters and stuff. But, like, now, 5 seasons in, about 2 years of the war has passed, so all those ships would be more dirty and beat up and, like, lived in and stuff.
And
so that's actually a really cool production, like, development that they've developed over 5 seasons.
Well, prequel era, we're also dealing with mainly, when you think about it, the main crux or the main settings of it are more, I don't know how to put it, not the upper echelon of the galaxy, but
the armpit of the galaxy?
No, the richer parts in the prequels, in the Clone Wars. It's a Coruscant, you know, which is like, you know, New York City or whatever, you know, it's big, there's money there, there's culture there, there's seedy parts of it too, but it's big and flashy, or, you know, like Tokyo or something.
Yeah.
And Naboo, which is a very, you know, pastoral, it looks old, but that's like the architecture's old, everything's very clean and kept up and...
It's kind of like Paris or Rome,
right.
That has like very old architecture, but it's kept up to look nice.
But it's kept up, or they just keep making it like that, you know. So it's new, but it just looks like that. And so you still have Tatooine and stuff like that, which is getting into the armpits and stuff. But but once you get past Tatooine in Episode One, Your sort of base of operations is Coruscant, which is, you know, you're dealing with Jedi headquarters and not Jedi's flung to the far corners of the galaxy and stuff. So it had a more new urban look to it, you know, and I think he also wanted to say this was, you know, in a more peaceful time. So things were better maintained and, you know, they were making things... You know, they were spending the money on civilization rather than on machines of war and stuff like that. So by the time you get to the Star Wars era, everything that is, you know, all the money's being put into the Empire's war machine, and everybody else is just sort of living in third world conditions.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no rebuttal.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Chris is right.
I didn't think it was that scandalous of an observation. No. So
I have nothing to add.
Oh, good. We shall not fight tonight yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Because I think you'll like my next note. Ready? Gascon is stupid.
He is. He's a stupid dummy.
Like, I mean, honestly, he has no idea if Abafar is a nice planet or an enemy planet. And he walks into a fucking diner and goes, hey, I work for the Republic, and I need to be served. Like, if Gascon was just cool and just walked in and was just like, hey, can I have a cheeseburger? Like, they would have been fine. Like, but he had to be like a big man and fling his tiny dick everywhere.
And that's why he didn't get served, because that guy was like, this guy ain't cool. I only want cool people in my diner. This guy's just trouble.
I also kind of think that, like, you know, of course, later we find out that it's a separatist planet, and like, but but at the same time, like, I could see, like, Borgin's, like, saying, like, oh my god, this is a separatist planet. I don't want a Republic colonel in my bar. And my diner, like, that would be a bad day for me.
Right.
And so when Gascon did that, I was just like, oh my god, you dumb fuck. Yeah. And just this first act alone just made me relive the previously two episodes again. So all I have to say is thank god we get Gregor.
Well, at least in this one, Gascon is getting treated like a stooge more. You know, he gets kicked out of the diner and just is
gets done. Chased with a knife like Sebastian in Little Mermaid.
Yeah, so he's like, you know, at least he's getting a little like blowback from his surroundings, which is nice to see, unlike the last couple episodes where he was just being a jerk
and he had nobody to like face him for it.
Yeah, you know, the droids would pick on him a little bit, but that's about it, you know.
Yeah. So I just thank goodness for Gregor, because that made this episode so much better. Well, I don't have anything else for Act 1, do you?
Nope. Act 2?
Act the Tool. Gregor comes out of the diner and accidentally dumps trash on Gascon like he should. He's very kind, saying he can bring Gascon food if he needs it. Gascon realizes that this man is a clone, and he starts bossing Gregor around. And Gregor is hella confused and super insecure about why this tiny frog is suddenly yelling at him. I would be too. Mr. Borkin screams for Gregor to get back to work and leaves Gascon in the trash where he belongs. Gascon meets up with R2, who tells him that they're on a separatist planet. After work, too precious for this world, Gregor asks his boss what a clone is. And Boss Man is like, well, clones are these big heroic guys, and you're a dishwashing piece of shit. I gave you life here, and gave you a place to work. So you're not a clone, so go home and be useless, you mooch. And Gregor asks where Borkus found him, but Boss Man refuses to say anything and leaves. Gregor gets that look on his face that he's starting to think for himself. Sadly, we go back to Gascon and the D-Squad, where Gascon is blowing more hot air about how great he is and shit. And they find the Separatist landing pad, and Gascon wants to roll down there like they did on the Separatist Dreadnought a few episodes ago and take the ship by force. But R2 points out that after the Dreadnought incident, the battle droids are probably aware of who they are and knows the D-Squad's IDs. They're going to have to take the ship by force, and Gascon knows just the guy to help him. Gregor goes home to his basement apartment, and the droids are waiting outside his window. R2 beams a hologram of Rex through Gregor's window. And Gregor freaks out, thinking it's a picture of him. But Gascon comes in and saying it's Rex. They're both clones in the army, and it's time for Gregor to know the truth. Gascon pretty much tells Gregor that he's a soldier, and he's been trained to fight and die, and not be a dishwasher. And Gregor is understandably nervous. He feels lucky to live where he is, because he's a darling boy. B-O-I boy. He's a darling boy. That's the sound. Darling boy! Gascon tells Gregor to his face that he's Borkus' slave, and they need to know where Gregor came from. But Gregor has amnesia, and he can't remember. R2 scans Gregor's wrist, where there's an implanted barcode, and pulls up Gregor's military history. Turns out the dude was a commando at the Battle of Sarish. The word Sarish triggers something in Gregor's mind, and he asks about it. Gascon explains that it was a huge loss for the Republic. Gregor remembers all the bodies of his brothers on the battlefield, and he holds his hand in his head. He needed to get them help, but he can't remember past that. Gascon says that Gregor can't help that battle anymore, but the D-Squad really needs him. And it's time for Gregor to kick ass and chew some bubblegum! What'd you think of Act 2, Chris?
I liked it. It's like the clone therapy. It's a little bit of a... R2 doing his little mind games, like from The Last Jedi with Luke, where Luke's like, I don't know if I want to fight again, and then he shows him Princess Leia, and this one he's just like, I don't know who I am, am I a clone? And then R2 goes, meow, here's a picture of a clone.
And it's Rex!
And the prototypical, here's the ideal clone. And so, yeah, it's very much like
Gregor's first reaction is he thinks it's a picture of him, because he doesn't remember what a clone is. So like he looks and he's like,
that's the thing is, it might as well be a picture of him. That's what sort of does it. And it's like, oh no, that's someone else. But they're like, you know, and then you get a little bit of the, you know, just clone talk about, oh no, well actually they're all different and blah blah blah. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
I sort of thought he was gonna instantly regain it. Is this a part where he sort of hits his head on the edge of that case he's got there with his armor in it, isn't it? Or isn't that the next part?
Say what again? I'm sorry.
Is this a part where Gregor hits his head on the edge of his case that has, I think it has the armor in it or something?
Oh, that's the next part.
Oh, okay.
We can talk about it now.
Well, I thought that was going to be what triggered his memory, and it might have, but they don't really show it as such. But when he hit his head, I'm like, oh, maybe this is where, because that's usually in a cheesy story where someone's memory comes back. My only other note is, there's just some good Gascon doing a total frog hop in this one. He's done some hopping before, but he does some total, like, get down on all fours and jump like a frog, and that's really cool. So something cool about Gascon for a second.
You said a nice thing about him. I'm so proud of you.
A little bit, yeah. It's not about his personality, but he hops cool.
Yeah. I think at one point they even have, like, a boing sound effect, like a boing.
Yeah. He's made extra froggy in this part.
Well, for me, my first note is Gregor is so precious and sweet. I love him. Especially because the very first thing he does is, like, when he accidentally dumps trash on Gascon, he tells Gascon he'll bring him food.
But he never does.
Well, granted, the tiny frogman started giving him orders, and he was just like, I don't know you, dude.
Yep.
Why are you standing on my trash can? Because he was, like, really kind and soft. He's like, I'll bring you food. And Gascon's like, I order you to take us to your ship. And he's just like, I need to get back to work now. Bye.
Yo, I'm recording.
I would have done the same thing if I was in Gregor's position, if a tiny frog came up and started shouting orders at me. But, like, what I like about that moment, though, like, when he was offering to get Gascon food, it really established, like, right away, like, what a soft heart Gregor is. And then I started realizing all the clones are such little softies, like, deep down. Like, I started thinking back at Waxer and Boyle back on Ryloth when they had Numa, the little girl. And at first they were like, brr, it's a tiny girl. But by the end of it, they're like, I will kill for this girl.
Right.
She's our sister. We love her. Don't touch her. We'll kill for her. So, like, I just really like that moment because it really established, like, I just find Gregor so fascinating because, like, this is, I feel like, what a clone looks like stripped down, like, if they're not fighters. Like, this is kind of like a glimpse of, like, what their other lives. Kind of like Cut Laquane, like, you know, this soldier was stripped away and we just saw Cut for who he was. And that's, he was a father and he was a farmer and he enjoyed being a father and a farmer and, like, that was his life. And so I like these episodes where we get to see, like, non-soldier clones because we get them so rarely. And getting a chance to see if, like, we could then, like, imagine, like, it's really easy to imagine Rex and Rebels fishing for Jubas because he's not a soldier. It's just who Rex is on his own, downtime, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Cool. And then I also started realizing it's been a really hot minute since we've had a clone in an episode. Because, like, Rex was in the Saul Guerrero arc, but he was just background in that. So it's really been since the Slaver arc where Rex actually played more of a bigger role that we've had a prominent clone.
Well, that was a clone in a big part, but this is one that's sort of focused on a clone, too. We haven't had one of those since probably Umbara.
Yeah, Umbara. Because the Slaver arc, Rex was there and he was playing a big role, but outside of that, I mean, he was still kind of background. Like, the last time
it
we
wasn't
had, like,
about him being a clone or anything. This has more about being a clone in it, you know?
Yeah. So I just, I feel like it's nice to get back to basics and having a clone episode again. So, okay, I want to talk about Gregor and his boss and his life, his poor life. Because, like, to me, also, Gregor is such a sad character. Because we have talked at great lengths on this podcast about how clones are slaves to the Republic, and they pretty much serve the Jedi to do their bidding, and they were made to be killers and, like, die in battle and be fighters. And then here's Gregor, and he is technically a clone that is free from this war, because he's not fighting and he doesn't know what he is, but he's still free and he's away from the Clone Wars. But he's not. Like, he's a borderline slave. He works for this jerk that doesn't pay him that much, who demeans him and treats him like a servant. And Borges is holding, like, Gregor's origin over his head. Like, he knows exactly who Gregor is and where he came from. And he won't tell Gregor because he has that power over him. And so, like, it's really sad to me because he left, like, one instance of being a servant to this big Republic to pretty much being this other guy's servant. And it's just, like, a really sad, like, existence for him. And I will pick up the second part of this point in Act 3.
I have the second part to this point in Act 3, too, so that should be interesting.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think I'm quite... It's going to be quite the same as yours, though. I think I might take it in a little different direction.
That's all right. That's what podcasts are for.
Oh. Oh, awesome.
We have a thing called a podcast, Chris, where we can, like, discuss things.
Oh, I thought if we disagreed on it, we had to duel.
Oh, well, let me find my saber.
Oh, Agent saber. Oh, jeez.
Agent Callus, give me your bow rifle. I have a Callus now I can fight you with. Let's come and fight.
I'll be wearing my Greavy mask.
Oh my god, if next time we're, like, physically together, we should do, like, just a stupid video of us, like, fighting our toys. Just like, rah! Rex is all the way over there. Do I really want to get up and grab Rex just to push a button?
No,
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't.
Do I really want to get up and grab Rex just to push a button?
But yeah, like, it's just... Gregor is such a sad character to me, because, like, pretty much... This would, in normal circumstances, like, if he was Cutla Quain. Like, Cutla Quain left the war and had a chance to be, like, truly free. I think Cut is the clone that has always been the most free until we get Rex and Rebels. And I don't... Like, it's, like, this would, like, normally, ideally, it would have been, like, Gregor's chance, too, but he doesn't know it, and he found a jerk who treats him like a slave, and it's just a really sad existence for him, that, like, he is still stuck. He's pretty much in the same position he was as a clone for the Republic.
I'm holding my tongue till the third act. I'm holding my tongue on that one till the third act.
I bet they have clones who aren't that good in battle who washes dishes on Republic ships.
Somebody's gotta wash the dishes.
Probably droids, actually. I take that back. They probably have droids to wash dishes. But yeah, oh, man. Anyway, that's all I had for Act 2.
Act 3?
Act 3.
All right, let's doodly-doodly do it.
Gregor comes out cleaned up and ready to fight. So rest in peace, his beautiful beard. Their next goal is to find Gregor's missing equipment. They head for the diner, but they don't realize that Borges is listening in. They reach the diner and can't find anything. Borges arrives dragging in a trunk. Gregor confronts him about keeping his armor from him. And Borges says that Gregor owed him for saving his life. But Gregor says that Borges was he was Borges' slave. But no more! And Borges pulls out a blaster on Gregor and hits him with it. I mean, Gregor's probably a little rusty, right? And the D-Squad gangs up on Borges. Borges begs and then taunts our hero, saying that the Republic cruiser will blow up. Turns out the Separatists are here mining Rhydonium, which is highly explosive. They plan on loading it on a shuttle and blowing up something in the Republic, which probably has something to do with the encryption module that the T-Squad had to steal in the first episode. At the Separatist landing platform, Gregor is all suited up and ready. They see a cruiser up in the atmosphere where the shuttle will be going. New mission. The D-Squad and Gregor will take the shuttle and save the cruiser. Gascon hops in Greyjoy and they roll out. And the battle breaks out and Gregor is just demolishing droids left and right, exploding fuel tanks and just taking names. But Greyjoy gets hit again and the droids leave Gascon behind. But motherfucking droid killing Gregor shows up and saves Greyjoy and Gascon. Wack gets the ship in the air and Gascon says that they can come back around and pick Gregor back up. And Gregor says that the mission is more important. He promises to find a way back home. And he promises and I cry. And Gregor gets pinned down by droids and shoots the shipment of fuel. And the entire base goes up in an explosion with him in it. And Gascon says that they will take Gregor's story back to the Republic and watch for Gregor's return in Season 2, Episode 3 of Star Wars Rebels. The end. The end.
All right. So I got some stuff to say. Just my easy notes first.
Yeah.
There were two save yourself okay moments in this one. The first one at the beginning with Frog Boy. And then this one with Gregor. An awesome, one of my favorite things is looking through binoculars, but this might be the first time we had a really long look through, if at all, through clone helmet cam.
Yeah.
Which is very much like a video game.
Well, it's a commando, and the commandos come from a video game. Yeah. Actually, they probably pulled that from the video games.
They probably did. Oh, yeah, you're right. They probably did.
Yeah, because the commandos came from a video game franchise, so they probably did.
All right. So, I'm going to say Borkus reminds me a lot of Watto from episode 1, who owns Anakin.
You know, I could see that, yeah. Yeah.
I think Borkus has actual affection for this guy. I think he actually likes him. And in some way, even though he's a self-serving scumbag, in some way, he's really, you know, it's like, all right, so you could be in service for the Republic and have an exciting life and end up getting blown up or shot. Or you could be a dishwasher and live a full life, and maybe someday he wouldn't be a dishwasher.
That's true, because why would he bring back his armor to give him that choice?
It's like,
I didn't think about that.
It's sort of like, oh yeah, Borkus is awful, and then Gregor realizes his true self. But I don't think his true self is that awesome place to be, really, as we've had that discussion for the last 5 seasons about how, you know, the ethics of being a clone. And, you know, he's not even a deserter. He's sort of like lucked out at where doesn't even have a guilty conscience and could, you know, who knows? He might be, you know, he might end up somehow getting off planet and having a good life somewhere, you know, as a farmer or something, or who knows? But I don't know if he's in the context of this episode, we know he comes back, but it doesn't look like he's coming back in this episode.
That's true, because, like, it wasn't until Rebel Season 2 that we even knew Gregor survived. Like, I remember the first time I, like, saw Gregor while watching Rebels, I was like, okay, there's Rex, and then there's Wolf, and I was like, who's this other guy? And they're like, yeah, and this is Commander Gregor, and I was just like, oh, Gregor! And then I started crying. And I was just like, oh, God, it's Gregor! And then I was like, how the fuck did he get out of that? And I'm like, oh, then it makes sense of why he's crazy. He exploded.
Yeah, I mean, who are the jerks here but you know, Frog Boy and the droids? Because they're just like, oh, hey, stop serving this guy in this job where you're just basically kind of miserable, but you're going to live. Here, come, you know, instead of serving him, serve us where you're going to get blown up in a few minutes to help us on our, you know... His cause is to get the dishes washed. Our cause is to get us off planet by getting you blown up.
All right, you know, choose.
I don't think they actually like plan to get him blown up though, because like even
but I
then,
mean, that's
like
your general job as a clone, your cannon fodder. Yeah. When it comes right down to it. You know, that's part of your training, is to sacrifice yourself, which he does, you know. Once his training snaps back, he's like, oh, all right, you guys complete the mission and all that. So, you know, I mean, as far as life goes, I would rather be a dishwasher than be in a war.
You know? So, yeah, you're right. Our notes are quite so different about
Barkus
that section.
Barkus is not a nice guy, but he's not. I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think his, you know. I mean, the worst, you know, Barkus isn't like, come back and I'm going to grind you up and feed you to my customers. You know.
Yeah.
His doesn't really usually end up with Gregor being dead, so. There's that.
You're right. We do have different notes on that section. If that's what you were
referring
to. Well,
yeah, that's all I got. So let's see how.
I'm sorry. My chair is still squeaky, and I was trying to cross my legs.
You still haven't got that WD-40 yet, huh?
I don't think about it until I'm like, let me lean back. Oh. Oh, everything's fine. Oh, no. I don't think about it until I'm, like, sitting at my podcast, and I was like, oh, God, I should have done that. I just need to write myself a note or something. So, my first note, how fitting is it that the 100th episode of Clone Wars prominently features a clone?
Well, the first episode was a clone episode, basically.
It was.
So.
It was. I mean, like, because the first episode was Yoda sitting three clones down and saying, hey, you guys are individuals, and you guys are respected. And, like isn't that, like...
Basically, you know, Yoda was sitting the audience down and saying, look, here's what's going to happen in this show. These are people, so you're going to actually get to know these guys.
And, like, Clone Wars is a lot of things. You know, like, it's you know, the downfall of Anakin. It's, like, developing Ahsoka and stuff. But also one of the big factors of the show is the clones. And that's why what makes Order 66 so heartbreaking is because now we have the history of all these guys.
And the show does not shy away from the ethics and problems involved in the idea of the clones.
Yeah. So I find it so, like, fitting that the 100th episode is about a clone who has forgotten who he is and is getting a chance to, like, do his own thing. And it features him. And I love that. I don't know. Where I was saying at the beginning of this episode, where a lot of this just feels like any other Clone Wars episode, there's no, like, bells and whistles to it. Like, it's the 100th episode! Hooray! But at the same time, like, I do feel like it's purposeful to feature a clone on the 100th episode. I feel like that was a choice that they made. And that is their bell and whistle.
Yeah, yeah. And thank God it takes the focus away from the droids and you know, Diggum.
What is the name of the frog in Star Fox? Star Fox.
Oh my God, you're right. Oh, I used to play that game on the
N64. Flippy Toad.
Oh my God.
Oh, he's Flippy Toad.
I used to love that game.
Oh my God, Gascon is Flippy Toad.
I liked Flippy Toad though.
That's true.
He had a nice little cap, like beanie sort of cap, if I remember right.
You know what I actually really liked? I liked Gregor's scruffy look. I liked the beard and the scruffy hair.
Yeah, well, that's something you just don't see very often, you know, so.
I was trying to think back. I mean, we've seen
some scruffy clones when they've been in situations where they probably couldn't space shave and stuff like that. But
and we've seen, like, Boyle have, like, you know, he was very proud of his mustache. He had that handlebar mustache and stuff. But, like, Gregor
has that. So it looks like when they make someone scruffy on a soap opera, that's the look he had. The scruffy soap opera look.
He actually looks like those Geico caveman commercials.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Just a touch, like about halfway there. But I liked. I don't mind him cutting the
dishwasher caveman.
Like, I don't mind him, like, cutting the hair. I just kind of wish he kept the beard. Like, I'm a beard girl. I like beards. So, and a nice, well-kept beard is very handsome to me. What did I write here? One thing that doesn't have to do with... Oh, okay. So, this doesn't quite have to do with the episode, but I was thinking about it, about, like, what happens after this episode. And just kind of things that it's a story that I wish that we had that we don't still have. But it has to do more with Rex. And I started thinking, like, we don't know a lot about Rex's timeline between Clone Wars and Rebels. There's a big gap there. And we've had a couple fill-in things. Like, we saw a little bit of the Battle of Mandalore in the Ahsoka book. And Rex had told Kanan that him and Cody helped write codes for the Empire. So we know that Rex briefly, probably at some point, served the Empire. But, like, we don't know a lot about Rex outside of that. Like, we don't know how he finds Wolf. We don't know how he finds Gregor. And how Wolf, Rex, and Gregor took out their inhibitor chips. So, like, I kind of just want, like, when I was trying to think of, like, Gregor from this episode to Rebels.
I was
going to
say, just hang out and wait. There's probably going to be a book on it at some point, you know?
I'll give anything for a life
for
of
a
Captain
Rex book. Yeah, it could happen, though. I mean, I could totally see that happening.
Yeah, I would give anything for a Captain Rex book, or even like a comic miniseries like that.
Maybe that should be your next fan fiction that you write, and then just send it into to Kathleen Kennedy.
Write a spec script for it.
Yeah, just write a novel of what happens, you know, at Rex between, you know, the end of Clone Wars and the beginning of Rebels.
You know, like, the one that actually interests me the most
write
is...
Write in diary form. Dear, like, diary.
The one that interests me the most is actually, like, when Rex told Kanan that him and Cody wrote codes for the Empire. Like, the idea and thought that Rex served the Empire, like, sickened me, but was also, like, super interesting to me.
No, I could totally see it happening and him being just
totally
like, I can't
too.
Do this, you know?
Yeah, I totally see it too, because I'm sure there was a time where, like, a time period there where, like he had watched his brothers, like, kill Jedi, and he didn't have his inhibitor ship, and he had probably had a moment of, oh shit, I have to play along, if not, I'll die. And so I could see him playing along for several years until he finally found a way to get out of it. But, like, that idea...
There's a lot of story. Maybe he could have been a saboteur while he was there, you know?
Yeah.
So there's plenty of story possibility in there.
Yeah, and so, like, I just... like, that is the story that is very interesting to me. Because I... Especially, like, with someone like Cody. Like, he knows Cody. It's like, we know that Rex and Cody are friends. And I could see him, like... trying to talk Cody back, like, Order 66 was probably not the greatest thing. I can't believe you shot at Obi-Wan. And, like, Cody would have been like, no, it was the right thing to do. Like, the Jedi were traitors. And, like, Rex trying to save his friend, but, like, he realizes he can't save his friend, so he has to make the choice to leave. Like, I could see Rex, like, trying to, like, save some clones during that time period. And then just finally just got to a point where he was like, I can't save anybody but these other two guys. Let's go fish for fucking Jupas. Like, that's this. I just find that story so interesting that I would just absolutely love to see.
I mean, that's a prime sort of thing that they usually do novels on, are those gaps with characters where you have, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities for stories there, and you know somebody's going to mine it.
Yeah.
Especially now that Rex came back in Rebels, you know.
I was hoping it would come up in the current Darth Vader comic, because it takes place, like, right after Episode 3 when Vader's learning how to be a Sith Lord. But they just did a 3-year time jump. So we're not at the end of Episode 3 anymore. We're in the first 3 years of the Empire. And I was just like, fuck, I wanted Rex and Vader to meet. Damn it. I would have cried. Okay, so now, here's my opposite note to your note.
Okay.
Of being a dishwasher.
Okay.
So I was thinking that too, that Gregor is like a super sad character to me, because he was a slave to the Republic and then he was pretty much a servant to Barkus. And he never really had a life of his own. But that's actually what I really like about Act 3 so much, is that he chose to fight this battle, because he could have turned down Gascon, because what the fuck would Gascon would have done? what would he have done? Like Gregor could have easily said no and said, no, I want a simple life and be a dishwasher. But he chose to fight, and he chose to do it on his own, and he chose to make his own path. And no matter how brief it was, like, that was something that was super admirable about him. And it also echoes into who Gregor was in Rebels. Because in Rebels, Gregor has a moment where he tells Rex how happy he was that he got to choose to fight for something that he believed in. Nobody was telling them how to fight, and nobody was telling him what to fight. He fought for it himself because he wanted to. So it was just a really nice moment that, like, however brief, like, that was his true freedom.
Well, I think, you know, from what I, you know, despite what I said, the minute that Gregor kind of realizes, I mean, Gregor fully realizes who he is. By the time he's fighting, he remembers, you know, the battle and everything.
I like that line when he was just like, I forgot, I remember now how much I hated these guys.
Right. So once he gets back into being a clone, then he ain't going back to being a dishwasher. Then it's fine that, you know, because he's doing what he wants at that point. But if he'd never regained that knowledge of his past, I think he would have generally been better off. So it was, yeah, R2, the little bastard, that really kicked it off, as always.
Well, I'm pretty sure Gascon was like, R2, do you have, like, a picture of a clone? And R2 was like, I hang out with this one clone all the time, and he's the best.
No, I'll bet you Gascon was just like, R2, do something.
That's true. And R2 was just like, fine, I'll do stuff.
I got this trick that I know to guilt people.
I'm going to do it in 40 years to Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, yeah, like, I try to, you know, he tries to keep, you know, not use the same trick twice, but he'll repeat it after 40 years if it's necessary.
I mean, it's a good time, you know.
It's a good trick. It works.
It is a good trick. It does work.
It's called a galaxy saver.
This is the galaxy saver, guys. It's true. It's true. I do like the music in the fight scene. I think it's a really good moment.
I call it the Luke Sky Guilter.
What did I read the other day that was so fucking funny? That
I don't know. What did you read?
I don't know. What was it? It was Cad Bane. Oh, God. It was this little, like, exchange on Tumblr. And it was like Anakin was, like, interrogating Cad Bane. And he was just like, blah, 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 blah. And Cad Bane was like, whatever, Luke Skywalker. Oh, God, what was it? Oh, it's not funny anymore. I had to think about it now. Anyway, yeah.
Tumblr. Wow.
I know.
Memories.
All alone in the moonlight. Gotta scroll past the haters to promote my Thrawn fanfic in the nighttime. When I'm riding to all hours of the morning, look, a new day has begun. Thrawn Fig, all alone! Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, jeez.
God, I haven't heard Memory in so long. I'm so surprised I remembered that much of the tune. I literally haven't heard Memory in over a decade. Wow. Hello. High school.
See, I was going with Barbara Streisand, and you went with Cats.
It's me. Of course I went with Cats. Come on. I'm a crazy cat woman.
I like the Cats song better than the Barbara Streisand song anyway.
So, I will say a tiny, tiny, tiny spoiler for Rebels. It's the tiniest of spoilers, so you don't have to, like, cover your ears. Gregor's line of, I make my way home, I promise, is so true, because he found Rex and Wolf, and he's at home with his brothers, and my feelings. He found a home with his brothers, and then they're brothers, and the Jupas, and the ship, and it's my feelings. Yay. Yay. So, okay, my last note, sorry. I'll stop fangirling, I promise. So the Gregor stuff in this episode is so good, but the Gascon parts are so bad. But I do have to say, like, I do love Gregor. Like, Gregor's in my top 10 favorite clones, which I can list if you want. But I absolutely adore his character. the only thing that really brings this act down for me, that I only... Oh, okay, sorry. I misread my note.
If you married Gregor, he could get you Pregor. I thought that was really terrible joke, but I enjoyed that laugh. That was a nice little
I'll be Prego, my Lego. No, I will never be Prego.
Or if you put on the strap on, you could be Gregor's Pegger. A Gregor Pegger. If he has some bad, like, gummy stuff on it under his foreskin, it could be Gregor Smegger.
Okay, that was the killer.
And he could put on his Gregor leggings when you guys go out jogging.
I'm just gonna see how far this goes. I'm just gonna sit back. You got any others?
No, I'm done.
Okay. No, all I was just going to say for this note is, like, Act 1 is the only thing that really brings this episode down for me. But overall, this is a great episode, and I really love Gregor so much that he just carries this one for me. This is actually, like, one of my favorite episodes of Clone Wars.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I would say, like...
Just basically because of Gregor.
It really is. I would say maybe, like, not top 10, but top 15.
Right. If this episode was Gregor top to bottom, it might like have gotten a higher score than I haven't looked at your score yet, so I shouldn't say it might be 9.5 for all I know, but
I would say like
if there was less Gascon and droids, would it be higher in your ranking maybe?
Yeah, I mean if it was just Gregor, or even if it was something like if anybody other, I'd be happy if Jar Jar found Gregor. Gascon really is the killer of this, because even like Whack kind of takes a back seat on this one after Act 1.
Yeah, Whack doesn't do an awful lot after the first act.
Yeah, so, I mean, after Act 1, like, it really is just Gregor and Gascon. And so if it was, like, anybody other than Gascon, like, this would have a higher score. I just really freaking hate that tiny little slug, and I just want to pour a pound of salt on him.
Seal him up in the corner of a space building and then let him out and, hello, my baby, hello, my honey.
No, because then I would be poor, because he would only do that when no one else is watching. I would be poor.
Except no, because that guy would just, like, poke the frog. I would know this was Gascon, and I'd be, like, duct taping him to a chair and, like, lighting up a, like, blowtorch and be like, psst, I know you can sing, dude. You're gonna sing. And he'd sing. I wouldn't even have to hit him with the torch.
I wouldn't want to do like the cask of Amontillado. I think that's how you say the Edgar Allan Poe thing.
Amontillado.
Right? Yeah, that's it. Sorry, I've never been able to say that right. But the cask of Amontillado.
I learned it from Andrew Leyland. Amontillado.
But I would be like, hey, Gascon, there's like a meal in this hole in this wall. And he'd be like, cool. And then I'd be like, okay, enjoy your meal. And then I would like seal him in a wall and just let him die of starvation.
I'd dump some crickets in there and let the crickets multiply, and he could live on the crickets. He'd just be stuck in the wall for the rest of the time. That's even worse.
No. Well, for 3 days until he ran out of water. Because eventually the crickets would die, too, of lack of food and water.
Well, no, crickets can find their way through little spaces and eat. He could live off the crickets. He wouldn't need water. He could just live off the moisture from all the crickets.
No, I want him to die.
Seal him up. Okay. Drop a brick on him. Put a firecracker in his mouth like all sadistic kids used to do with frogs.
No.
Or at least that's what they did in the cartoons.
I would just bury him up to his neck in salt so it would slowly dry him out.
Those are slugs, but that would work with a frog too, probably.
It would probably definitely kill him. Or like, just, you know, with rice, you know, like when you drop an iPhone in water and you just put it in rice and it sucks all the moisture out.
Yeah.
Fill them up with rice. It'd be great. Wow, we took a dark turn at the end of this episode.
Don't like that Gascon. Don't like him. Do not like.
No, but like, yeah, at the end of the day, like, if it was anybody other than Gascon, like, this would probably be a really, really, this would be an easy 9, if not higher, because I just love Gregor that much. Like, he's one of my favorite clones. He's in my, while this episode's not in my top 10, it's in my top 15. Like, Gregor is, like, number 4 or 5 on my clone list. And I was thinking about my clone list earlier today.
Hope's so. Clone list.
You want to hear my clone list? My top 10 favorite clones? Okay. Rex and Fives are first. They, depending on the episode and the situation, they exchange that number. So they're 1 and 2, in and out. And then probably Wolf and Gregor. And then Waxer and Boyle share a spot. And then I just blanked on every fucking clone imaginable. Oh my god. Well, there's my top 5. and probably just, no. There's somebody else. I know I'm forgetting them. Cut Laquane and Slick are in there too. That's 6 and 7. Cut Laquane and Slick. And then the other 3 is the rest of the, like, the 501st. So that would be
about
like
99?
Jesse.
Oh, wow. I thought you'd be like, oh, 99.
No, I love him, but not in my top 10. Because the other 3 spots would be like other 501st people, like Jesse and Kix and Hard Case and in Top. I love Top. Top is a precious baby. Top is precious. So yeah, those would be about my top 10 would be, but like Cut Laquane and like Slicker in my top 10, and Gregor's probably about number, swapping out 4 and 3 with Wolf, depending on the situation.
Every time I hear Top, I think of a friend who's got a friend's pug whose name is Gup.
Gup,
which is pug backwards, yes.
Yeah.
So he's Gup.
Aww.
Another little Ernest Borgnine. Borgnine.
Well, that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No, you ready to score this up?
I'm ready to score this puppy up. Let's go.
I'm looking at your score now, too, and I'm okay. I thought this show was a rally from the last few episodes, and I really enjoyed it. I gave it a 7.5. It probably would have been higher if it was more about Gregor than the rest of those clowns that I've been waiting to get rid of anyway. So
I would, this episode, now looking back between the kids arc and this arc, this is the best of the last 7 episodes.
Yeah, I would say that. That doesn't make it insanely good. Although the last episode the kids arc, I think I gave that a 9.
I think you did too. Yeah. That was so surprised.
I'm whipping back in my notes right now. Yeah, I gave it a 9. So I guess I definitely like that one better, but that one was a grievorific. That was a Grievous in the third act. Grievous just stomped through and did the
and we also had Hondo.
So
yeah.
So yeah, so I guess I don't like this one as much as that one, but it was definitely a big rally from the Void and the ones before it. So 7.5er.
I'm not too far off from you. I mean, as much as I really hate this arc as a whole, this is one of my favorite episodes of Clone Wars. I just adore Gregor. I love his character. I love who he is and how far he comes in 22 minutes. And again, this is another example of how implications impact Rebels, which is always just so interesting to see, like, how they built Rebels on top of Clone Wars. I just love it. And he's just such a good character. And I also love that, like, the 100th episode is about a clone. Because the clones really are the defining characters of the show, or one of the top defining traits of this show. And, like, while, like, Wack and Gascon, like, brought down the first act for me, I just can't overlook how much I love Gregor. So I gave it an 8 out of 10.
There were things to happen. There were things to happen and characters to meet in this episode and things we haven't seen before. It was just such an improvement over the last one. I mean, what did I give the last one? I gave it a 5.5.
So. Yeah, I mean, and even just, like, the town being as simple as it was, like, it's still, like, you know, it does look a lot like Tatooine, and I love the fact that they have signs like Admiral Snack Bar. I wish it actually had a picture of Akbar on it. That would have been even better. But,
well,
I mean,
you notice how, like, in just in our planet, you still have a lot of, like, if you go into, like, even, like, at, like, Saudi Arabia or something and say the outskirts of it, you'll have a lot of, like, the stuff that's, like, basically the architecture of the area. But every once in a while, you'll run into a strip mall or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what this is. It's like you're in the, there's all these different planets and different cultures and stuff. But the outposts sort of look the same, you know? It's like they're working with the same sort of cheap materials to build just a temporary housing. So they all end up sort of having a little bit of that Mos Eisley look if they're that kind of terrain, you know? And I like that. It's,
you know, something we didn't talk about was, like, the inhabitants of the city. Like, one of my favorite, actually, a moment that I really like is in Act 1, they're rolling through the town, and R2's like, these people are probably, like, bad. And Gascon's like, no, these are good people. And you see this tiny little Frogger guy, like, mug somebody else for his chicken leg.
Yep, yep.
It's just little moments like that. And there's, like, a Doug walking around. And there's, like, from the sassy Commander Wolf episode that I loved last season, the little Frogger guys. There's a few of them in this episode. And I love those guys. I love them so much.
Whatever the guys were, all I think of them is the guys that go, ah! Before they blow up in episode one, they're that race.
But like I liked it because it was also, and just like little things, like Gregor was walking home and he like waves to a dude and the dude waves back to him. I mean, it felt super lived in, and even though it was very much of a place that we've seen before, because it is very Mos Eisley
and it's very basic and stripped down. There's not a lot of they didn't spend the detail on a lot of stuff. They'd spent the detail on the dust and grit.
And even then, like, something as simple as, like, Gregor's apartment. Like, it had, like, he turns on the light and bugs scatter. And, like, that's his life. Like, he lives with freaking roaches. Oh, and he drinks. He pulls out, like, a bottle of wine and, like, chugs it. Like,
well, yeah, he's a dishwasher. What else is he going to do? And he's got a little prefab apartment. You could tell it's just, like, poured concrete. Everything's just poured concrete and then prefab stuff stuck in it.
So, yeah, and like it's really nice. Like it's so simple, but there's so many like tiny little details that like really made this episode really good.
Well, that's what Star Wars sort of specializes in.
Yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, The Gathering. Take it away, Chris.
The Gathering. All right, the first one comes from Aaron Henley, and he simply says, baby Wookiees, yay. I wouldn't say he's a baby, but he's a mini Wookiee. He's definitely.
I think I'm pretty sure I called him a precious baby Wookiee a few times.
He's definitely older than Lumpy was.
Yep.
Okay, so we got one from Robert Bell. And Robert Bell says, I rationalize this arc with the Legends book Jedi Quest, Path to Truth. By saying that Anakin was given special treatment in the book where Ilum first appeared, Obi-Wan and Anakin travel alone to a planet. The way the cave was described, it came off much more isolated than the one seen in Clone Wars, much more like the temple on Lothal. So I assumed it's a different cave than the one on the show. In the book, the Jedi Council was divided on if Anakin was ready to get a proper lightsaber. Mace and Yoda were the most cautious. Oh, Mace, imagine that. But Obi-Wan was steadfast in honoring his master's request. When Anakin built his lightsaber, he received visions of his mother and Maul. Instead of embracing his anger, he remained calm and overcame his anger. But he never told Obi-Wan of the vision. So even back then, I don't know how much Anakin fully trusted Obi-Wan to open up to him. I may have that Jedi Quest book. If it's what I think it is, I think those are little young adult paperbacks.
Yeah.
And I've been picking them up. I see them at garage sales all the time, so I have a big stack of, I think, Jedi Quest and, I think it's Jedi Apprentice is the other series. So I'll have to check that out to see if I have Path to Truth. The Path to Truth. And the next one's from Paul C. Kelly. You know, I can't remember his voice that I did last time for Paul C. Kelly.
I think it was like a teenager voice.
It wasn't, though. It was more... That's, Because then it would be more Anakin-like. I remember doing it maybe more Dude
Was
Bro.
it was it Paul? I think Paul had the normal voice. Hold on, I'm pulling it up.
The normal voice, well.
I think he had the normal voice while somebody else had the teenager voice.
The teenager voice is Patrick Delmore.
No, sorry, you gave me the, gosh, I'm going to be talking like this the entire time.
Oh, I gave you the Valley Girl, yeah.
Yeah, well, you gave me the Valley Girl. You gave Patrick the teenage voice, and you talked normal as Paul.
I cannot do a Boston accent to save my life, so I'm not even going to try. Or else I would do Paul C. Kelly in, like, the most exaggerated Boston voice ever. But, so just imagine I'm doing a great Boston accent. Paul C. Kelly says, Yoda takes a line from Empire in this one. So certain were you. Like, how that was not too forced in there. Hope, sorry I did not give Bodhi a shout-out in my comments on your Rogue One commentary.
Yeah, I worked really hard on that, guys.
It's all about Bodhi. I meant to say I liked him along with Chirrut, probably one with more to risk than the others. He is the one who convinces the Imperials on Scarif that Rogue One is a valid ship and makes communication with Radish. Unfortunately, just in time to meet a thermal detonator. Rebels rule.
I put this in here also just because Paul, it's totally okay. I was really joking because, like, when I was reading everyone's feedback, but then I saw, like, the feedback on Instagram and people were like, oh my god, I fucking love Bodhi. Like, I was more poking fun at you guys, so it's totally okay. So, but we have one, I just remembered this, we have one more bit of feedback, and you can't see it because it's on Twitter. So John M. Wilson wrote to me today on Twitter, Star Wars Dark Disciple from Christy Golden is an emotional roller coaster of feelings that Hope Mullinax did not prepare me for. I am loving this book. Right at the part where they're rescuing Blank, but Blank thinks that they're consumed by the dark side, and he pulls a lightsaber out on them. Ah! So you're welcome, John. Yes. Dark Disciple is a fucking emotional roller coaster, and I was not prepared for the last third of that book.
You weren't ready to put your arms up at the right points?
Yeah, the last third of that book is just like, because the first two-thirds is just like adventure and romance, and this is fun, and this is adventurous, and Quinlan Voss, and I'm enjoying it, and this is great. And then you get the last third of this book, and you're like, what the fuck is happening? Oh my god, stop! Like, I know there was a couple times I had to put down the book and just be like, No.
I like the parts where you get so emotional, you gotta, like, I picture you, like, running halfway across the room so you can yell so it doesn't overdo your microphone. Or maybe, actually, like, kicking your chair, which has wheels on it, and rolling, like, halfway across the room just going, blah, and then rolling back.
Actually, that's really hard for me because you guys want to know a secret?
You got carpeting?
No, the majority of my reading that I do is on the toilet.
Oh.
So I can't physically, like, get up and, like, move and stuff. So, but there was a few times I was reading, I was just like, no! And I would literally reach over and pick up a piece of toilet paper and, like, wipe my eyes.
Okay, let's just make this clear that when Hope's reading a book, not when she's, like, reading her synopsis on Jay Guys and Jedi. At least I hope not. I really hope not.
My toilet wouldn't do this. Okay, it's not squeaking as much anymore. There it goes.
Well, I don't know. Your toilet might need some WD-40, too.
No. Oh. I actually... Funny story, because I'm reading the Thrawn novel right now.
The Thrawn on the throne?
Well, the thing is, I'm reading a Thrawn novel, and it has his eye, so I have to keep it down so he can't see me pee. I can't, like, have it facing me, because it just stares at me.
Well, yeah,
and
he'll know how to use that against you.
I know, so I have to put it face down because I don't want him to watch me pee. It makes me really uncomfortable.
Wow.
Candy!
Wow, I'm trying to open my candy and make little crinkly noises, but it's so tiny this time.
I know.
It's the tiniest candy we've ever had. It's
just so you guys know, Chris hates American Kit Kats. So our friend Dario Gonzalez, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, is a flight attendant, and he sends his candy from all over the world to review. And today we are eating a tiny slab of Daskalides which is a bite-sized milk chocolate from Belgium.
It is
so thank you, Dario.
Finest Belgium chocolate, 30% coke, 35% cocoa.
Oh, I thought you were about to say 35% cocaine.
35% cocaine. Now we should have eaten that at the beginning of the episode if we were going to do that.
We wouldn't have an episode. You'd just be laughing and I'd be like rolling on the floor.
No, I'd just be blabbing incoherently probably. All right, so mine's broken into two perfect triangles, actually.
Mine too.
Oh my god.
I'm so
it's really thin. It's just this little thin. It's probably, what, like an inch and a half by an inch and a half.
And it's, like, not that too sweet milk chocolate.
It's like 35%,
enough.
Which is usually bitter, but it's on the bitter side, but it's milk chocolate. So it's not, it's actually, like...
This really is the finest Belgian.
It just, like, melts on your tongue.
I know. This really is the finest Belgian chocolate. Belgian.
Well, speaking of cocaine, not that I'm an aficionado of cocaine.
Say that again, I was laughing, what?
But I did try it back in my day. But these days for Chris, if I eat chocolate, I used to have a girlfriend, and whenever she ate chocolate, like really good chocolate, she would put it in her mouth, and she would dance around like a bird, like flapping her wings, like, rawr! And I'm like, what's that? She's like, that's a chocolate dance. It's like putting a drug into me. I feel like this rush of just like, happiness from chocolate, and I just sort of laughed it off as quirkiness. But now as I get older, I like as chocolate melt as good, like high quality chocolate melts on my tongue, I feel just this endorphin rush from it. So I understand the chocolate dance,
you know. I only had, like, one bad run-in with drugs ever. Because, like, and it's actually why, like, it's why I don't smoke pot. Because when I was in college, you know, like, I would go to cast parties and there'd be pot and stuff like that. But, like, one time, like, I had some stuff and it had to be laced with something. Because I just had a super bad reaction to it. And I was, like, hallucinating. And there was one point where...
It might have just been very, very strong is what happens...
No, I felt like my skin crawling, like mm-hmm. It was bad. And I remember just laying in bed with my boyfriend at the time, and like the wall was behind my back, and he was laying in front of me because I was having such a bad reaction to it. And I was just like, honey, the man behind me is touching my face. He's like, honey, there's no one behind you. I'm like, he's touching my face. And so he like reached out and like touched my face. He was like this, Hope?
Yeah, no, that's the wrong thing to do. The right thing to do at that, this is after years of experience, the right thing to do in that condition is to go like, oh, he is? Here's a peanut butter sandwich. And then you go, peanut butter sandwich, and go like, or whatever, a peanut butter and fluff, something delicious. Here's something delicious. And then you go, oh, but the guy touching my face, oh my God.
No, so, like, he was touching my face, and I just, like, looked at him, and I was like, you're both doing it. And then, of course, I don't remember saying any of that. I was told that I was saying that later. But, like, that's why I don't smoke pot anymore. That was the deal breaker for me.
I have a coworker that pot is, well, she does not smoke it anymore, but it's, you know, it created... Her smoking pot created some of the greatest anxiety she's ever experienced in her life. And I know there's a lot of people like that, you know. I think it's, it's part of your body chemistry, how you're going to react to anything, you know. And then you have mutants, like, literally, like Keith Richards, who's physically, like, genetically a mutant in his liver. He is. He's a medical mutant. And you can pour drugs into Keith Richards and they don't seem to, like, have an adverse effect on him. You know, his body heals from his liver. He can pour as much alcohol. He can drink as much as he wants and his liver doesn't seem to be the worse for it. But he's a one in a, 10 million mutant that's like that. Ow. That would be nice. I would like to be one of those mutants, but unfortunately I'm not.
No. Well, that's all I have for the 100th episode of Clone Wars. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's where we have twotruefreaks.com. That's where we post up all the podcasts. All of them. I want to point people to an especially fascinating episode. I wish I knew the number, but you can find it by just by looking Gene, the podcasting machine.
Cool genetic mutation. I'm sorry, Gene. I fucked that one up.
He did, recently did an episode where he was addressing money in Star Trek, which is a topic that's been on the Two True Freaks minds a lot lately. So check that out. Gene also runs our Twitter page at Two True Freaks. And we have a Facebook page, which is very much like the Two True Freaks page. We post on Two True Freaks Facebook page. We post all the podcasts up, and you can talk about them there. And you can go to the Two True Freaks Cantina, where we just talk about random stuff. I think I'm going to post something sometime soon about the whole, like, Holo New. Let's see what people think about that.
Oh, Lord.
Where can
have
they...
fun with
that. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysandJedi. I run our Twitter account. Though now that Rebels is over, I've been a touch quiet lately, but I've also been on a writing sabbatical of my own. So I haven't actually done, like, anything in a week and a half other than work and write. You can also find me on Twitter at Hope Molinex, where the other day I was having fun live tweeting fucking Timeless, because God, I love Timeless, and the season is 3 episodes in, and it's so good so far. Oh my God. I'm loving Timeless so far this season. I'm also the news writer for WhatTheFangirl.com, and I'm also, as I've mentioned, started last week and again this week, I'm writing a Thrawn fanfiction over on AO3, which is short for Archive of Our Own. You can find me under Chaos Lydia, and the story of my fic is called Forces of Gravity, and there's 5 chapters and so far 31,000 words.
Well, you must, but last time I checked it, and you were like 2 chapters away from the good part, if you know what I mean, the good part.
I ended up adding an extra chapter, so now I am again about 2, maybe 3. Because, like, the last chapter I put up was 16 pages long, and so I was just like, but I ended up adding some stuff that I didn't know. But I've been also, the way the story is set up, the story is being told from the point of view of Thrawn's son, because he has released a novel pretty much called My Dad Was Thrawn in the New Republic, and the New Republic's losing their fucking shit over this book. And so it's him recalling his parents' life. So the first part
of... people read books in Star Wars.
But, like, the first part of it is all from Cass's point of view of him growing up with these stories of his father and then finding out, like, what a terrible person his father was and having to come to terms with it. So, like, there's actually... I've been having fun, like, writing that part of the story, while on the other end of it is the actual story of his parents. And so I ended up having to add, like, an extra chapter because it would have been, like a 25-page chapter if I didn't split it. So I'm having fun. It's nice. And then every time I think about going back and writing my novel, I just, like, cringe because I'm just like, ugh, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready to go into mass, like, studying.
I haven't got the Thrawn out of my system yet.
I haven't gotten the Thrawn out of my system, but NaNoWriMo starts in... 5 days, so I gotta write fast. No, I'm just trying to get to a certain point, so like where I can like finish like part one, and then I can go back to it after NaNoWriMo and stuff. But I'm actually debating NaNoWriMoing this fan fiction just to get it all out of my system. I'm actually thinking about doing that. Don't tell anybody. I don't know yet.
I won't tell anybody, but the podcast is just did. So there you go.
So, guys, don't tell anybody. It's a secret. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's where you can find me, on AO3 under Chaos Lydia, and my fanfiction's called Forces of Gravity, in case you ever want to read anything that I've ever written. Because I talk about my writing a lot, but outside of What the Fangirl, you guys haven't been able to read any of my fiction, so here we go. Cad Bane was in the last chapter.
Oh, they're all reading it right now. Aren't you
no,
guys?
No, they're not. No, they're probably making fun of me right now, let's be honest.
No.
Yes.
No, 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 not our people.
Are you kidding me?
They're too classy.
Oh, no, that's exactly why. So, anyway. Yeah. Well, that's it for this week. Wow, 100 episodes of Clone Wars, Chris, we did it.
Yes, we did. Well, actually, Filoni and crew did it, but we were there watching them do it.
Yeah.
We had our moment in the sun with our 100th episode.
We did, and it was fun. But I guess from here on out, we have one more story of Gascon and the droids, and then it's downhill from here.
Oh, I thought it was over.
No, we got one more.
All right.
If I remember correctly, though, because I only remember very little of next week's episode. And I think there's a lot of action in it. I do remember a lot of action.
I hope so.
I hope so. I do remember that the majority of the episode is with Gascon and Whack and the droids.
Okay.
So one more, Chris. Awesome. It's done. Be strong.
Okay.
I'm ready now.
At least I'm ready now. At least it won't be a surprise when I pop up the episode and go like, oh, jeez.
Well, pretty soon this arc will be a memory, all alone in the moonlight. But a man, a man, a man, a man, a man. Bye, guys.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at TwoTrueFreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
And this is your Uncle Don saying good night.
Good night, little kids. Good night.
We're off?
Good. Well, that ought to hold the little bastards.